Welcome to the Decent Crypto Podcast. Today is Tuesday, February 13th. We are back. Matt, it's been a minute. Hey, how's it going? There's a lot to talk about. A lot's happened, huh?
Yeah, kind of. It feels like a lot, and it kind of feels like nothing all at the same time. I guess the number one thing is the ETF, right? We gotta talk about the ETF. We entered into, so ETF gets approved and it's Barry's turn. That's never a good thing.
Yeah, never a good thing. I think like everybody's talking about, you know, is this going to be a sell the news event going into it? And turned out it was. Like, I don't know. You and I were both talking about it. We're like, no, everybody's talking about it's going to be a sell the news event. You probably just want to buy. And for like a couple hours, we were right. You know, nice little pump to about 50K, a little less than 50K, and then just immediately sold off for like a week straight. It didn't quite go as planned, but I don't know. I guess everything is just a sell the news event.
Yeah, it's a tale as old as time, right? It eventually sold as low as 39.5K, like January 23rd. You know, I think a lot of it is people are exiting the GBTC trade, right? So GBTC, the fees are like way higher than any of the ETF providers. And so now that like you can get liquidity on that, like you can redeem your GBTC for BTC, sell it, and then buy the, you know, any of your other favorite ETFs, right? The thing is, a lot of people are in profit on this thing, right? So they have tax exposure, right? And so if you made, you know, 100K or whatever on your GBTC trade, you can only buy 50 safely in, of the new ETF, like if you want to withhold like taxes. And so I think that's a huge impact, right? Is like, a lot of people were wondering, okay, if you're just like net rolling from GBTC into some Bitcoin ETF, why aren't you like, why is the price going down, right? It should be neutral. Like you sell and then you buy. But I think a lot of people are actually like setting aside cash for like tax withholdings because they have long-term gains. They can't offset them with like short-term losses, or they don't want to. They don't want to roll their entire bag back into Bitcoin. Or maybe they're holding cash to rotate it into, you know, alts when the time comes. For a couple of weeks there, we just had pain. It was just like a continuous like track the flows, look at how many GBTC got redeemed, look at how many new shares of the other ETFs were created. And it was always just down only, right? And I mean, GBTC is massive. It has a fuck ton of Bitcoin, and it could have kept going like that for a long time. But it felt like the outflows sort of started to settle down, started to taper off. And then it's like, everybody kind of woke up one day and was like, wait, hang on. That's right. The ETF is bullish. Like people get kind of like, it's amazing how quickly mentally you can just get like so worked up over like a very short term narrative and forget that like there's something that like, it's not even medium term. It's like 2 weeks later, right? That like is giga bullish, right? So we started to see inflows again. We've seen Bitcoin yesterday broke 50K. Today it broke it again on the way down. Because of an inflation print, which is just the dumbest
fucking thing. That's the wildest thing to me.
We're still doing this. We're still playing the inflation print game. Like what? I don't know. I'm tired of macro. I refuse to engage in macro podcasts, in like thinking about macro. It's just like there's a 4-year cycle, there's a halvening coming up. That's the macro event that you really want to be tracking here. And the same way that I think people got positioned ahead of time for the ETF and then sold the ETF, I think we'll see that same thing happen with the halvening. I think we'll see a run up in Bitcoin and then we'll see a sell off basically the day of the halvening. That's kind of my, and then, you know, like sharp moves upward after that. That's my base case. What do you think?
I more or less agree. I think the halving is going to be priced in before it happens, and I think I don't know. I think we'll probably you think we'll break all time highs, like go to like 75K or something before the halving, or you think like lower than that?
It's hard to see that happening, right? Because as we approach all-time highs, the marginal buyer is probably thinking to themselves, there's no way I'm buying the all-time high on Bitcoin before the halving, right? I think after the halving, everything's fair game, but it's hard for me to see like most investors wanting to go long Bitcoin at the all-time high before that happens. What do you think? You think we break like 75K? You think we'll break all-time high before the
Yeah, I
halving?
think so.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, I could see it. There's just so much more capital right now, right? Like now that it's available to the spot ETF crowd, like you got to remember, a lot of the people buying Bitcoin in spot ETFs like don't know about the halving, or like they'll hear about the halving and think they're early. And they may just buy on the basis of that, right? It's a bit like the merge trade where everyone was like, oh yeah, the merge is coming up, I better buy some now. And then like immediately sold off like following the news, right? I think it's the same thing for the halving. I think like for a lot of like TradFi analysts, like reducing the new supply by half, they're gonna be like, wow, what a dream, right? This is like an insanely bullish like catalyst. I have to get ahead of it by buying. And then I don't think they realize that it takes, you know, a few months for the happening usually to start playing out.
Yeah, I actually think it'll play out pretty similarly to the ETF, where there's a few months of like kind of consolidated, just steady build up, followed by kind of a blow off top right around the halving, like right around the actual event, and then it will settle down, and then resume up only for the rest of the year. The thing is, like, how long do you expect this cycle to run? Or, do you think we're in a super cycle?
Of course, I think we're in a super cycle. No, I think it's just getting started, right? I think retail's not back yet, and you basically need institutional flows to drive the price of Bitcoin upward, and then you need the more crypto native Bitcoin holders to sell their Bitcoin for alts, and that's what drives like the absolute craziness, right? I think and you know, when it comes to craziness, like retail, those are your marginal participants that you're trying to bring in, and they're just not there, right? So institutions are showing up, they're starting to buy. We're a bit like where we were like in early to mid 2020, right? And we haven't really seen normies or retail start to come back yet, and they're the ones that ape into like the really speculative stuff that can just like skyrocket because there's just not that much liquidity on the sell side. So I think we're back in a 4-year cycle. I think we definitely pulled ahead a little bit because of the ETF. Like we usually wouldn't have seen so much positive price action ahead of the halving. And so I do think that could lead to a few like down months following the halving. Like I don't think it's like going to be a week the way it was with the ETF. I think it could be a few months. And then following that, I think we start up only season like in true form.
Yeah, so you think like what, like June, July, August would kind of start to go up again after the halving?
Yeah, it might be Q3, it might be Q4. I think we get a quiet Q2. I mean, I was gonna say, do you think we should throw a halving party?
Yeah, that would be fun. Yeah, wait, when it's literally supposed to be on 420. That's so
It
crazy.
is.
That's so funny.
I guess we have a lot of
Yeah, I think
competition
we'll be
for
back in
parties
New York.
that day, but
Yeah, I know. We'll both be back in New York, presumably.
allegedly, yes.
Yeah.
I think a
All right,
halving
yeah,
party
that
can be
sounds
pretty
fun.
fun. Yeah.
Yeah, our merge party was fun.
Yeah, it was a fucking blast.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's kind of the post-ETF like analysis. Do you have anything more you're thinking about on that?
No, not really. I think at this point we're kind of starting to see the real kind of like price movements, you know, once the GBTC hangover cleared. I don't know. I just expect the flows to continue to stay positive for quite a while. And I do think we'll hit all-time high sooner than a lot of people think.
Wow.
I'm still in the camp of like the cycle is, you know, left translated or just kind of, you know, topping early, however you want to call it. But I don't know. We'll see how that plays out.
I mean, I know people that thought that the top was the day of the ETF approval and that we weren't going to get a full like 4-year cycle this time and that we were only going to get like a, you know, like a really quick mini cycle. Do you think there's a probability of that still?
Yes, kind of. But I do think that we'll still see all-time highs on Bitcoin and most other, or like, you know, Bitcoin, ETH, and Solana.
Yeah.
But I don't know if it'll be as crazy as last cycle.
Interesting. Speaking of Solana, we had a big event a couple weeks ago. We had the Jupiter airdrop.
Yeah, a
Did you
couple
track
big
any of
events, yeah.
this?
Well, yeah, I mean, I claimed mine. I guess like it was a whole, they turned it into a whole like event, you know, it was like a whole like month long thing. They had like
Jupuary.
multiple, yeah, exactly. They had like multiple, you know, token airdrops. They had, you know, like experimental kind of like token airdrops. They had, the actual airdrop. They had a bunch of selling that they did afterwards. Like, all right, let's just give people a quick little breakdown. Do you wanna go through the whole event?
Yeah, so okay, so ahead of the airdrop, you had two sort of like test airdrops, Mock Jupe and Wen. I don't think you could claim Mock Jupe, but I'm not sure. But it did start to send because people were like, oh, this is like the Mock Jupe token and it should trade at a
Yeah, this is
premium
the
or whatever to
proxy.
zero. The proxy, yeah, exactly. It's like, how do you get exposure to Jupe before the airdrop, Mock Jupe? And I mean, you had the founder of Jupiter, this guy Meow, who's absolutely nuts. You had Meow tweeting about like Mock Jupe is worth zero. We are going to send it to zero, and then people just started bidding. And so that was kind of fun. Then you had Wen, which I think was just like another like build the hype kind of token. That one you actually could claim. And then Wen was kind of an interesting one because after a certain period of time, if you hadn't claimed it, they took all of your tokens and burned them. That was an interesting case study, right? Because the price of Wen went up going into the burn because everybody was like, oh, they're going to burn the supply. That's bullish. I better buy some now. And then as soon as they burnt the supply, it dumped, right? Because it wasn't like the supply was like marginal selling pressure. It was just like locked, right? And it didn't actually impact anything in the like liquidity profile of the token. It wasn't like the locked, you know, unclaimed when was being market sold or anything. It wasn't like it was creating sell pressure. And so it's really easy to ascribe like too much meaning to FDV, I think. And this was my read on it, is like FDV kind of is a meme. Like, what is the FDV of when supposed to be, right? Well, if you think that the fair market cap of WEN or the fair FDV is, let's call it 50 million, right? You actually should sell it going into the burn event because say half of the tokens are getting burned. Now each token should be worth actually like half as much because the FDV represents like all of the tokens. And when you decrease that like denominator, actually you should decrease the numerator accordingly. People kind of thought about it from two sides, right? Which was like, one, like burning supply is bullish because it takes like supply off the market. Not true. Unclaimed supply is not in the market, right? Two, if you're actually calculating this on an FDV basis, like the FDV just doubled when you burnt the supply, right? Or yeah, like it effectively doubled, right? Like it should be halved by the am I getting that right? No. 50 million tokens each at a dollar. 25 million tokens should trade it. I guess it should trade it too. I just think that like trying to do like supply analysis. Yeah, okay, I got that backwards. Trying to do supply analysis on these kinds of things is silly. They should double, and they kind of doubled going into the burn, and then immediately sold off like crazy. And I knew people that were like actively buying into this catalyst. And it's like, this is a fucking meme coin. The fact that it has a catalyst is a blessing to begin with, right? Once that catalyst clears, what do you have? A meme coin with no catalyst. Exactly. And that should be worth less. And so I think like a lot of people learned a really important lesson here, right? Which is to not try to like mid-curve. It was very mid-curve, right? The idea that like the value, the price of the token should double if the supply halves or whatever. And it wasn't trading the emotional game, the meta, the events, the way things play out. It was like trying to overthink the trade, I think. So that's my take on it. I think like I think buying when was like pretty mid curve.
Yes, I agree. What about Jupe itself? So Jupe itself dropped like what, a week after when? There's a lot of a lot of
controversy.
Yeah, a lot of controversy, mostly just hate. I would say, go ahead.
So, okay, let me break it down. So, so the day of the airdrop, like Jupiter itself, they created a single-sided liquidity pool with pricing ranging from 40 cents a token to 70 cents a token, right? And basically what this pool does is it will sell you Jupe at those prices, depending on how much has been sold already, in exchange for USDC. And then you can sell Jupe into the pool and receive USDC, right? And so it's effectively like, I don't know, like a bonding curve, or just like a fairly priced like IPO, where they just say, look, we're going to put this many tokens on the market. However many of them people are willing to buy at whatever price, that's how many we're going to sell. And then they basically take, at the end of 7 days, it was going to be 3 days, but at the end of 7 days, they remove the liquidity, which means they're removing the remaining Jupe tokens that went unsold and the USDC that went in to buy that Jupe. And at that point, the liquidity takes like a much more normal setup where you have two-sided liquidity pools on, you know, on every DEX or whatever, earning the fees. The problem is that like as the price went higher, it took more and more buying pressure to move it like an incremental cent, right? And so the day of the drop, it went from, it started at like 40 cents, big MEV or, you know, if you wanted to buy some, you basically had to set your priority fee high as opposed to setting your slippage high, which I think like kind of threw a lot of people. Like Swan is like different, right? Like, you set like a flat priority fee. It's not like a gas price. And so I bought some Jupe and I paid 0.3 SOL in fees to do it. And I was like, wow, that's crazy that I'm paying 0.3 SOL, but it got through no problem. As it went up more and more, you know, it basically followed the curve of the liquidity exactly. The price followed the curve of the liquidity like to the T. So there was just like a constant amount of like DCA buying pressure on these things. And so say every minute or whatever, people wanted to put $5 million in, that 5 million moves the price less and less and less as the liquidity or as the price goes up. So they sort of like backlogged a lot of like the tokens so that you couldn't really buy that many at 0.4 because it would move it to 0.5, but you could buy a lot between 0.65 and 0.7. And that dampened the pumponomics, I think, quite a bit. And I think overall that was a mistake. I think the token probably could have flown had you not had that, like, what do you call, like, asymptotic liquidity profile, where as the price goes up, like, you have to, you need more buying pressure to send it higher. And, you know, that's sort of the case with a lot of, like, liquidity mechanisms, right? But it was exaggerated for Jupe, I think.
And so is that now, like, all of that liquidity is pulled, or some of that liquidity is still left in that single-sided pool, or?
No, it's all pulled. So then came the accusations that, like, the team was basically using this as a way to sell $100 million, $200 million worth of tokens. And, you know, it fluctuates depending on the price, right? And so if the price had been at, like, 0.39 the day that they pulled liquidity, they wouldn't have been able to bring in any USDC, right? They brought in some because it was at, like, 0.5 or 0.6. And so a lot of people were basically saying, this is the team dumping on you, which is an interesting thing, right? Because I would say, like, on one hand, it was not very transparent. So this guy Miao writes these, like, 9-page or 100-page, like, Twitter posts or blog posts. He hides the, like, mechanism by which this thing is going to work under, like, a lot of models and math and just, like, random musings. They could have been, like, way, way more upfront about what was going on. And I don't know if that was, like, intentional or not, but it definitely didn't play out with a lot of transparency. So that's, like, one hand. The other hand, you have this better dynamic, I think, than normal, where, like, usually the way it works, if the team's going to dump, they take their tokens and they let average users sort of provide liquidity, or they let their market makers provide liquidity, and they turn around and dump. And that's just, like, a sale, right? Whereas, like, here, they basically put up all these tokens at a price range and said, whatever you guys think the fair value of this thing is, buy it up to there, and we'll walk away with however much cash the market thinks these tokens are worth, rather than us stepping in and just dumping on holders. And moreover, it provided a source of liquidity. They would argue it provided a source of liquidity for airdrop recipients to dump their tokens, because it did, like, that pool was generally where you were going to sell it to. And so they're saying, look, like, we let people buy it up from 0.4 to 0.5 or 0.6 or whatever. And then airdrop recipients could choose where they wanted to sell it. And this pool, like, created that liquidity for them, like the USDC that was in there. Not exactly, right? Like, had they not done this, there still would have been USDC liquidity. Arguably, there would have been more, right? Because people would have been receiving more fees. Like, this pool was, like, by far the biggest fee recipient out of any, like, LP, right? Yeah, I mean, their argument would be that, like, it gave people a chance to buy and sell the tokens at whatever price they thought was fair. I'm selling tokens to the market at a fair price. I mean, I think that, like, they got a lot of hate for it, right? But it's definitely different from just, like, taking the tokens and dumping them into the open market, right? They use them to provide liquidity on the sell side, right? And I think the thing that really killed them was this natural sort of ceiling on the token price at 0.7, at which point they would no longer, like, they would be out of tokens and no longer provide liquidity. I think there just, like, wasn't enough market demand to buy the token past that price to really send this thing flying. And I think that's what they weren't banking on. I think they thought that, like, there would be enough demand to break through that 0.7 ceiling, at which point, like, the liquidity is, like, super thin and it starts to fly. I think that was a mistake, right? They could have say set their prices lower, right? So that it topped out at 0.5 or 0.6. That would have been one option. Maybe that would have moved the ceiling to 0.5 or 0.6, or maybe it would have made it easier for them to just, like, break through, right? But it would have also capped the total amount that they could possibly get in USDC if their pool actually did get exhausted, like, much lower. Because here they were selling tokens all the way up to 0.7. Under that circumstance, they would sell them up to 0.5, 0.6, whatever. And so I think they could have set the prices lower, they could have set the fees lower, I guess. A lot of people give them shit for like also raking in fees on the liquidity pool. I think the number one thing is that it wasn't very transparent. And that when you have something like that where like the token doesn't moon and it's not transparent why, that's where people are going to start accusing you of doing shady shit, right? So I do think the FUD was overblown. Like it wasn't the team dumping 10% of circulating supply on people's heads. It was them saying, look, buy as much of this from us as you think is fair. And people decided to buy some of it, right? From 0.4 to 0.5, 0.6. But it did prevent it from mooning, which I think like if it doesn't moon within the first week of the airdrop, I think that token's in a really tough spot.
Yeah, so I was gonna say, like, what do you think of the future of this token? You think it's cooked like forever? Like basically every other DeFi token is down forever now.
Yeah, it's possible, right? I mean, that's the pattern match, right? So I bought some at like 0.68, and I held it down until like yesterday. And when Bitcoin pumped and alts pumped, and I mean, even Matic pumped, right? And you didn't really do anything. I was like, all right, this sends as loud a message as any that like the thesis is invalidated. Right, that there just really isn't much marginal buyer for this token. I think it's cooked. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, while we're on Solana, there was actually a lot of talk about, will the Solana network be able to survive during this Jupiter airdrop and claim? And it did, but then it crashed like a week later.
Yeah, pretty interesting, right?
Yeah, very interesting. Yeah, so what exactly happened during this outage? I think it happened at like 5, 6 a.m. our time, something like that, like early in the
Yeah,
morning.
it was super early in the morning. I mean, I like to sleep late, so I didn't experience too much of it. But I didn't exactly dig in. Oh wait, no, I totally did. There was like a piece of code that was meant to touch a core piece of software called the Berkeley Packet Filter, the BTF or BPF, I believe. I'm pretty sure that was the part of it, but yeah, the postmortem is basically like there was an infinite loop which caused the validators to sort of stall, right? Yeah, okay, 2024 mainnet outage report. Oh, sorry, this wasn't the BPF. It was basically like a caching program that didn't work as intended. And it caused the validators to think that like the block height like wasn't moving forward. And so they would just continuously try to make the current block. And then that caused everybody to basically run their programs in an infinite loop, which at some point causes the computer to restart. And then it's hard for the network to like keep moving forward. It's stalled, right? The 5 hour outage was an interesting one because it happened pretty early, like in our time zone. You know, a lot of members of the community, like Anatoly, tweeted, he was like, nobody even like asked, well, nobody called me, right? I didn't get brought in any like groups even to provide just like moral support. He's like, I woke up and the outage was like a few hours in, and then like a couple hours later it was done. And I think, you know, historically you would have seen, like I think this kind of reflects the fact that Solana is becoming more and more of a consensus trade, right? Because an outage on the network should have caused everyone to say, I told you so, and start shorting it, right? And you didn't really see a huge amount of price impact that day. It was like sub 10% for sure.
Yeah, as that was my biggest takeaway is that every outage is now just completely priced in. Like
Yes.
people just take it as, kind of par for the course, or just growing pains. It is what it is. We're solving for a different kind of thing here, and you just move on.
Yeah, like when the chain works, it works extremely well. And and it's sort of taken as a given that like that's not going to be all the time. It kind of is what it is, and it's not news anymore, right? Like I think if Ethereum had an outage, we would be like, I mean, it kind of did at one point recently, but I don't think it affected all of the clients. It was like a small subset. And that's what got the chatter around, like, do we have too many nodes running the same client? What if there was a mission critical issue? If Ethereum had an outage, that token would be down. It'd be down like 10, 15, 20%, right? Solana has an outage and it's like down less than 10%. And it like scoops the dip back up like very quickly. Every outage is priced in. It's a good way of putting it. I had called it in my 2024 prediction, a bullish outage, that Solana would have an outage and everyone would realize it was like, you know, expected and not a big deal. And we'd get the chain turned back on pretty quickly and everything would just skyrocket, right? We didn't quite see that, but we saw a pretty healthy rebound. And like, obviously like macro has been doing well, Bitcoin's been doing well. So, you know, it could be related to that, but it definitely hasn't really been underperforming nearly as much as it should have from a full-on 5-hour outage. Maybe this is the new nature of crypto, right? Is that like outages are normal. I mean, Arbitrum had an outage at one point it's had several outages, I think most recently because people were inscribing on it. Other chains suffer downtime or like gas fees because of inscriptions. You know, maybe an outage is something that like we're all just willing to work with here. And because it doesn't invalidate the thesis that like crypto is going to work long term. Whereas like if Bitcoin had an outage, or I mean, Bitcoin's had several like errors over its history, but if it had a big ass outage today, we would be like, wait, what the fuck? Like what's going on here? Like that's supposed to be the most reliable one. Everything else is so experimental that like, maybe people just brush them off.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I think Solana as a consensus trade is probably, I don't know, even that statement is consensus now, you know, like I think people have just accepted, which is very interesting, even from 1 year ago, from like where we were.
I mean, not everyone has capitulated yet, I think. I still talk to a lot of people that are like, they're not anti-Solana as a tech, or as a piece of tech, or as like a network, the way that they were like a year ago. Like a year ago, people were talking about how it's super centralized, the hardware is so expensive, like it suffers from outages, no one's ever going to use that chain, right? You don't hear as much of that anymore, but I still don't meet many people who are Solana maxis yet, right? Like they're still just like one subset of the space. Whereas like last cycle, if you ask people if they were long ETH, everybody was long ETH, of course, right? And I think we're still pretty early in the and you know, it wasn't like for a while that was ETH too. It was like this chain is like, you know, not as secure as Bitcoin, right? It's going to be running proof of stake, like it's too complicated, people can attack the network, right? Like Bitcoin, it was like hard real money, right? And I think we're seeing that same thing play out with, you know, ETH to Solana now, where it's like Ethereum, you know, it's never going to go down. It's like, it's hard money, right? It's gonna, I mean, kind of ultrasound, like it's reliable, it's expensive, right? But that's the price you pay for that security and like peace of mind of knowing that like your DeFi positions will never get liquidated because the chain goes down. And I think with Solana, we're going to start to see more and more people capitulate into the narrative, right? That it is the next one. And so I think we're actually still pretty early in that story arc as a percentage of people, but as a percentage of capital, what you see is that like not a lot of people or not a lot of capital was dumped in Solana form. Like not a lot of SOL tokens were dumped following the outage or during the outage. And I think that there's a lesson there.
Interesting. Yeah, I think like Solana is still what, like 15% of ETH's market cap. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of upside, right? Like you could see it.
Yeah.
going pretty high in this cycle.
Yeah, 0.1
If
ETH is
people
the meme.
start 0.1 ETH, interesting.
It's like not even
That's,
that, it's very imaginable, right? Like it's
yeah,
pretty
it's not even that
realistic.
far-fetched. Yeah.
Yeah, 0.1 ETH is the meme. If it hits 0.1, it'll skyrocket to 0.15, like I think. Anyway, so a bullish outage. Anything else on the Soul Train?
Not really. I think we're gonna see some volatility soon with Solana.
You
I
think
think it's
so?
gonna be Sol
You think it
season again.
shoots to 140?
I think I could see that.
I don't know why everybody calls for exactly 140. It must be like if some technical analysis thing or something.
Probably stuff beyond my reach. All right,
Exactly. We're not a sophisticated podcast. What
all
else?
right.
What else mooned? Yeah, speaking of moon, Farcaster,
Yeah,
what do you think?
Farcaster is mooning. Yeah, we were talking about this the other day, and I played around with Farcaster a little bit. I don't fully see the appeal, to be honest.
Yeah,
But
likewise.
yeah, it's yeah, I don't know, it's getting a lot of attention. They got a few airdrops as well, so I think that's got people excited. I don't know. I think it's really hard to bootstrap a social network like that. Like, I think it's mostly like just Ethereum people kind of, I don't know. It's a little circle jerk or whatever it is, but their active users are going through the roof right now, so we must be missing something.
Yeah, I mean, I think airdrop is definitely the number one thing that made this happen, right? There was like a token called DGEN on Base, I think, and it went pretty crazy, and it was airdropped to Farcaster users. So, just like quick aside, I'm pretty sure the only part of Farcaster that's actually on a blockchain is the mapping of like Farcaster user ID to wallet address, right? And so this is pretty interesting because basically you can have like an NFT project that's like retweet this tweet to get on the whitelist for the NFT. And when you retweet it, they can see who like which user IDs, like which Farcaster IDs retweeted it, then go to the chain and use that mapping to determine which addresses are eligible to mint. And that's sort of like the use case. The data's not on chain, the posts are not NFTs, like you don't really use a wallet for much of anything. And it's pretty interesting because the first time I was ever shilled Farcaster was in September 2022, which is nuts. And at the time I was like, I don't know, man, it doesn't really sound like it's going to be on chain. So I think I'm kind of out, right? It's just like peer-to-peer. And it's pretty trusted. You basically have to run a full node if you want to be guaranteed that like that content's going to be there forever. And that's expensive, right? And I think it was like I just didn't quite understand the point of it, right? Like a peer-to-peer social network, I guess, but it's like not incentivized by tokens, and so the economic model doesn't really like. It doesn't really hold for like why would anybody run this thing unless like you're like an advertising provider or something. I don't know. It just seems like if it's not going to be on a blockchain using crypto economic incentives, it feels to me like it's kind of theater, right? Like that incentive structure hasn't really been carefully considered. So that's kind of my brutalist take on it. The other thing that I find interesting though is the vibe, right? So it was a vibe of like the Ethereum researchers who don't care about money. Like this whole Farcaster thing is basically built by people that don't care about money. Right. It's like people that like care for whatever reason about like a peer-to-peer social network because it's an open protocol. It doesn't really like provide much in terms of value. It can be a home for meme coins, I guess, and you know, maybe you're early as a service or whatever. But it's mostly for the vibes. And for a while, the vibe was very aligned with just like old school ETH researcher who also doesn't really care about money, who like is thinking about like conceptual decentralization things. And then it just went super degen, right? Because airdrop farming is like the current meta, and it's like a pretty strong one. It's good product market fit with free money, right? And I think like I think I could see this really going the way of Frentech, to be honest, because Frentech was also an airdrop meta and a little bit of like PvP financialization meta, right? But like Farcaster isn't going to have a token itself, right? You're playing it for like ecosystem airdrops, right? You're playing for like to signal yourself by signaling yourself as a frequent user of Farcaster. You're broadcasting the world like what kind of like community member you'll be if you get an airdrop. And I guess that's appealing as a protocol that's airdropping tokens or as a meme coin developer. But I feel like we got to be at the point now where like it's pretty diluted, right? Where like the first big meme coin airdrop did well, the second one did less well, and from this point, I'm sure there's like a million meme coins being airdropped to people every day just for being Farcaster users that like don't really take off. And maybe there's like a diamond in the rough, but I think like now that like the expected value is probably a lot lower, I think we're just going to see people using it less and less, and I think we won't even be talking about it in 6 months.
Yeah, I definitely I think this is like the beginning of its 15 moments or 15 minutes of fame. I think like a social network like this, I think it's just I don't see the incremental value. Like I think this frames feature they have is the one that's like really been also driving some of their adoption, like some of their organic adoption, but and that might be a differentiator, but it's just hard to see this becoming a thing. I think Frentech is a pretty good example. I think the one thing that might make it different is that it's not as like hyper financialized, which you know could give it actually some more lasting power. But yeah, if a lot of the activity is because of airdrops, then yeah, that is bound to end.
It's like late last cycle Cosmos ecosystem where it's like, I buy this token, I stake it to get an airdrop, and what do you do with that token? You stake it to get more airdrops, and like at a certain point, it runs out of gas, right?
Yeah. Speaking of staking to get more airdrops, there was a great airdrop that happened that is going to be used to be staked to get more airdrops, and that is Dimension. So Dimension mainnet went live, and their token went live. It got airdropped to users and stakers of the Cosmos ecosystem, specifically Celestia. It got airdropped to Pudgy Penguins holders. I got airdropped to Mad Lads, to Tensorians, and to Bad Kids NFT holders. Yeah, what does Dimension do, Matt?
Dimension, let's reference their docs. It's something to do with it's roll apps, right?
Roll apps. Yeah, they provide what the like the execution layer for roll apps.
Is
Or
it
the
the
settlement layer for
execution
roll
layer?
apps.
Is it the consensus layer? I don't
Or maybe the
know.
consensus layer.
Easily deploy, yeah, it's the consensus layer. Easily deploy your own consensus-free blockchain and accrue more token value with greater security. A specialized modular blockchain to empower, unite, and service roll-ups. What? I think what is probably my strongest feeling about it. So it's its own chain, and you can stake your Dimension tokens on that chain. And I guess it provides consensus for roll apps. It's not quite data availability, even though data availability can also serve to create consensus. It's like the modular thesis, right, is basically made so that there's more tokens to bet on. And it has good product market fit there. So you have a token for the DA layer, Celestia. Now you have a token for the consensus layer, Dimension. And then you'll have tokens for like the execution layer, like Movement is probably like the strongest contender there, or like Fuel VM probably. It's just more modular beta, I guess, as a token is how I would think about it within a portfolio. And it's also, you know, airdrop beta too, right? So right now, Dimension is trading at a market cap of about $1 billion with an FDV of about $7 billion, which is puts it at number 74 on CoinGecko. It opened at $4 a token and it hit a high of like $8 a token. It's trading at like $7.12 right now. And I think it's a really interesting case study in airdrop mechanics, right? Because they did do a lot of things that are like kind of novel, like airdropping to NFT holders, I think is like super interesting, right? The Pudgy Penguin community is a really interesting one because they're not very likely to just like auto dump the airdrop because they've got so much money now from the Pudgy Penguins doing well. And the Pudgy Penguins will do even better the more airdrops that people think about giving them. And so it's cyclical, right? It's reflexive. It's like if Dimension does well, people will buy more Pudgies because they want to get the next Dimension, right? If Pudgies do well, people are less likely to sell their airdrops. It's a nice little like reflexive bubble there. I didn't claim mine. So the other interesting thing is you had to claim it within like a pretty short period of time. And I always get freaked out about that. Like I've never been hacked. I think like for me, part of the reason I never get hacked is I don't claim airdrops like ever. Like unless you automatically send them to my wallet, like I'm not going to get them. And this is part of why I like Solana so much is that like it's easy for the devs to just like send them because I'm worried that like, I'm going to click the wrong link or the front end is going to get compromised or, you know, who knows what's going to happen, right? And anytime you're signing something, you have to think really carefully about what you're signing. And with an airdrop claim, I don't know how that transaction is going to look. They probably look a little different every time. So I'm worried about getting wrecked. So I didn't claim any of my Dimension airdrop despite being a Pudgy holder and a Mavlads holder. So then they did something called the roll drop where a lot of people were like me and they didn't claim it in the span of like however many days. And they basically went and reallocated all of the incremental Dimension tokens to people that already claimed theirs. And so you only like, you know, it was something like you got almost like double or something what you would have gotten.
Depends like what your criteria was and stuff like that. But yeah, for Penguins, I think a lot of people got double what they originally had.
Pretty nuts.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting way to do airdrops. I can see a lot more of these types of airdrop mechanics in the future. For sure. And I think there's going to be a lot of crossover too, where, you know, people who are deploying, you know, ERC-404 contracts, let's say, will do an airdrop to Farcaster users or, you know, something like that, where there will be some kind of crossover.
Do you know much about 404?
I mean, I know that it's a hybrid standard, right? So it's like there is first a token gets minted, some ERC-20 style token gets minted, and there's a set supply, like let's say there would be like 10,000 tokens or whatever. That token will trade at, you know, whatever it trades at in the Uniswap pool. And then you'll have at some point an ERC-721 style NFT collection minted based on how many tokens are in circulation, how many ERC-20 tokens are in circulation. So usually they'll start out with something like 10,000, which means that at any point, 10,000 NFTs can be created, can be put into circulation. But in order to do that, you essentially have to burn an ERC-20 token, and an NFT gets minted. And on the flip side, you can turn that NFT into one ERC-20 style token at any time as well, which can then be sold into, you know, however many units you want. You can sell 0.001 units if you want to. So yeah, that's a little bit about how it works. That's also why you'll see a lot of these things trade at really high value or really high kind of like unit, you know, prices. So like one Pandora token will be like $20,000 or something like that, because you can convert that if you get a full one into an NFT, which will then trade at, you know, 10 ETH or whatever it is, something like that. So yeah, it's a pretty interesting dynamic. I would say at this point, there hasn't really been that much done with the standard, aside from create these new tokens that trade at pretty high valuations. Like Pandora is probably at about $200 million right now, market cap. So yeah, I mean, that's kind of how it works. It's really just four or five major tokens that have, you know, lasted more than a couple of days. And Pandora is really the flagship one. I think TBD on whether this standard sticks around or if it's just a flash in the pan.
Interesting, yeah. I mean, Pandora, yeah, has done extremely well, but I didn't realize that was why the price was so high. Pretty interesting. Anything else on Dimension? Did you claim yours?
I did. I have yet to stake. But I did claim. Or dump, yeah. Speaking of Dimension and airdrops, so Pudgies have gone absolutely berserk. They're at like 20 ETH now.
They are.
They went from like maybe 8 or 9 to 20 just this year.
Year to date, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, 8 or 9 to like 20, pretty crazy. ETH meanwhile has done quite well. So a penguin is worth more than a Bitcoin, which is nuts.
Wow, that's wild. Yeah, that is pretty insane.
And little Pudgies have done even better. So I bought one for my mom in like December over winter break. This is actually a really funny conversation. So they're at like 0.9 ETH at that point. And I turned to, you know, each of my sisters and I was like, would you guys like one? They're very cute. And they're like NFT haters, right? They're like, oh, fucking crypto again. Like, no, I don't care how cute it is. My mom's like, oh, that one with like, it's got like a little stuffed penguin as its accessory. That's super cute. And it's up like 100%.
What are little Pudgies at? Like two ETH?
1.9. They hit 2 like yesterday, I think.
Wow.
They're probably still underpriced, right? Like if big Pudgies are at 19, they drop from 20 to 19 over 24 hours. If big Pudgies are at 19, how much should a little Pudgy be worth? Like 5?
I think you can probably make the mutant versus Bored Ape comp, right? Like what was the peak of a Bored Ape? Like 100 ETH? Peak of a mutant was what? Like 30, 40?
I'm not sure. I didn't really track them.
Yeah, I think maybe 30 or 40 range, something like that.
Even right now, mutants are at 4 and Bored Apes are at 22. And
yeah,
Pudgies are at 19 and little Pudgies are at 1.9. I mean, it seems mispriced. Something's mispriced there.
Probably. Yeah, I could see them getting to like 25% to 30% of a pudgy.
So that's a quick 1x above where they're at now, a little more.
Yeah, 2x.
Pretty crazy.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm happy for the pudgy community. They've been through so much shit, man. Like, it's just like the saga is insane. Like, I don't know if most people remember, but like there was a time when like pudgies were like dead. They like the owner of like the Pudgy Project had like renounced it or like wasn't doing shit. There was supposed to be a video game. They were making like zero progress. And then is it Luca bought him for like a couple $1 million. He bought like the whole project, and the turnaround has just been unbelievable. Like, very cool to see.
Yeah, very impressive. One of the few teams in the space that's actually executing.
That should be bearish, but it's
it's
not somehow.
very impressive. Yeah, exactly. Somehow not bearish. Yeah,
Let's see.
I definitely support. All right, final thing. We finally got the wormhole token announcement. So the W token
Just
will
W. I
be.
love that.
Yeah, just W. It will be airdropped to, whoever was farming it, I guess, or just, I guess, all Wormhole users.
Wormhole users, as
We
well
haven't.
as they're doing the NFT thing too. So, if you had a Mad Lad and you joined the Wormhole Discord, your Mad Lad now has like a little W badge on it in the like XNFT app. And allegedly, Wormhole or allegedly Lads with the W are going for like a 50 soul premium, which is like at 33% above floor, which is pretty crazy. Yeah, it'll be interesting. I mean, why do they need a token? I don't know. Maybe they're, gonna do like a staking model where like you stake with certain wardens. I think that's what they're called, of the Wormhole network. I just think Wormhole is like a big beneficiary of the whole Solana season, right? Like, it's like a very Solana aligned bridge. And when you bridge on and off of Solana, like it's the first place that you think of to go, right? It also had like a lot of people that were working at Jump, who got like reassigned to just work on Wormhole full time. They raised, I think, 250 million or something for like a Wormhole like fund or the ecosystem fund. Or maybe it's just to pay Wormhole developers. I don't know. I think it's bullish, right? A lot of times for airdrops, like, a big part of what determines the success of the token is the amount of attention that's on the protocol itself going into it. And I think Wormhole is big. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I can see the token doing quite well. Yeah, let's see how the airdrop goes, but yeah, bullish.
There's people been farming it forever. Everything's bullish. I like that.
Everything is bullish, right? It's just that time.
Yeah.
All right, Matt, you got anything else?
No, I think we should do a deep dive. We should pick a maybe if you have any ideas, like drop them in our Telegram group chat. Like I've been very pleased with the quality of that group chat, except for this one guy. Was it Manny?
Manny, shout out Manny, P Brain Manny. That's what he asked us to call.
Sender of 10 messages in a row with no replies.
Come
Everyone
through to
else
the
is
Telegram.
like real high quality. I was on a fucking meeting yesterday, and at the end of it I was like, oh, by the way, like they were like, hey, thanks for taking the time in, like really appreciate your answers to all these questions. I was like, oh, no problem, love talking about the stuff. Like, always happy to meet again. Or if you guys want, you can just hit me up in the like Telegram group for my podcast. It's like, it's pretty high quality. And one of the people in the meeting was like, I'm in there. I was like, wait, what?
Nice. Love that. Love that. So yeah, come through to the Telegram. It's a good scene. We'll see you in there. We'll see you next time. And until then, stay decent.